So Full of Shapes is Fancy by Aja, read by the Dragon Girl. In which Feste sits less like patience on a monument smiling at grief, and more like Falstaff on a barstool laughing at happiness. Author's Notes for Thimblerig. Dear Thimblerig, I apologize for everything. With the departure of Malvolio from Illyria, Feste found himself simultaneously hard-pressed for entertainment and hard-pressed to entertain. Her ladyship was thankfully in a forgiving mood, so well pleased was she with the delights of the matrimonial bed supplied by her new husband. But the recent events of the Duke's court had left the place markedly bereft of laughter. Sir Toby was out of favor, apparently happily so. And while Feste would not have curried the goodwill of a man so repugnant had he not also had some personal motive of his own, in this instance, revenge against Malvolio, he had to admit that Toby seemed to have taken most of the members of the court with him when he removed himself to the tavern where he currently spent most of his days. Particularly, he seemed to have spirited away those who laughed most frequently and easily at Feste's brand of entertainment. Worse, Sebastian, the new lord of her ladyship's heart, struck Feste as a dreadfully serious young man whose attention seemed divided three ways between his new bride, his once-dead sister, and his sometime outlaw dear friend. To Feste's dismay, none of these circumstances conspired to make him smile at Feste's antics in Olivia's court. His sister, on the other hand, for her, Feste had the highest of hopes, as she had not only proven herself game for any undertaking, no matter how scandalous, but had answered well to both her brother's surprise resurrection and her husband's surprise proposal. It was that last point that had intrigued Feste for some days during the preparations for the wedding feast. As he watched the two couples, it dawned on him that this was where the humor, if any levity was to be found in such a farce, was to resurface. For who but a man of Orsino's highly refined, highly specific tastes would have so quickly proposed to a woman who, not 5 minutes hence, had been a trusted page-boy? Feste was no fool. He knew that the secret to maintaining his edge over the world's perpetual impatience with those of his trade was to put them in an equal state of perpetual exasperation. The man whose wits are run ragged has no time to realize that he is out of sorts. And the best kind of exasperation is the kind that tempts him with what he wants, but may not want to admit that he wants. Thus, the best comedian is the lady of the street who has the last laugh on her client. And the best fool is the one who can tempt his betters to depths within themselves of which they previously knew nothing. So it was that Feste conceived what would either be his undoing or his greatest triumph.
"How now, Malvolio?"
he laughed when he devised the plan.
"You may yet have your revenge at mine own hands. The more fool I, if this scheme proves more than foolish."
It was easy enough to convince Olivia to throw a masquerade for Orsino and his new bride. In faith, the two households had been practically joined in continuous celebration since the day of their mutual weddings. From there, what magic Feste would work required a bit more finesse. Antonio, who, while he remained Sebastian's guest, enjoyed Orsino's full pardon, was yet beset with fear that no royal favor would be enough to affirm his good name in Illyria. He proved the easiest of all to manipulate.
"Do you attend the ball?" he instructed Antonio. "But not as yourself. Rather, attend as someone so far unlike yourself as to draw away all suspicion that you are still engaged in those scandalous acts that so drew Orsino's ire and your endangerment when first you landed upon this rock."
Antonio received this advice with the guileless air of a pirate who had probably never plundered a bay in his life.
What creature on earth is so removed from myself that by adopting this assemblage I should do honor to myself rather than injury?
He asked Feste.
Why, her ladyship, of course, said Feste. Go you disguised as Olivia, and while you are there among the court, make you, in her guise, such sport of Antonio as to render the whole trickery nothing but blameless goodwill when at last you are exposed. For her ladyship loves to be the object of a kind joke, and will surely reward your flattery with good faith.
You are well spoken for a fool, responded Antonio. And truth, I think you are right. I will do it, for I love nothing better than to please my dear friend's lady.
You will be well met, said Feste. And if you have very good luck, you may please both in the same offering.
From there he moved on to Sebastian and Viola, and in both instances Feste was lucky, for he had an easy object, each in the other.
Come, my lady, he said to Viola, and later to the other. Come, my lord. There is a way to free your marital bed, fresh and joyous as it is, of the doubt that still persists.
What doubt? They said in turn, as though they still shared the same womb.
Why, the fear that your spouse is deceived or dissembling in their affection for you, said Feste.
You go too far in your quest for amusement, rejoined Viola, and later Sebastian.
And yet, 'tis not too far to observe that they loved you first in the guise of your sibling, said Feste. 'Tis true, is it not? There is an easy way to know the truth of their affection. Simply disguise yourself as your twin and attend the masquerade. There, do your best to make love to your beloved while dressed in the guise of your opposite. For sure, the attempt will be unsuccessful, and there you will have the ultimate proof of your love.
And yet, if the guise be seen through, thou wilt have caught me out in a deception, said Viola wryly.
Nay, nay, answered Feste. Only say it was in tribute to your recent escapades, and the device which brought you together.
And if the device proves far too successful in gaining her interest?
Asked Sebastian, squinting.
What then?
I would never dare impugn the lady's honor, said Feste. I only offer you a clear path to removal of the doubt you so obviously manifest.
With twin frowns, they answered him in such skeptical, non-committal language as to convince Feste they were both equally obsessed with the plan and would participate fully, and each without any awareness of his scheme for the other. Two more pawns in place, and only the king and queen to go. Feste donned his smoothest of wiles.
Given the joy of your marriage, my lord, my lady, it is with earnest desire to please that I do inform you that your bride, your husband, has been shrouded with doubt.
Such good hearts, the both of them, though admittedly not too bright. They readily demanded to know in what way they could have possibly alarmed their beloved.
Merely that the noble Viola, Sebastian, for naught but love and the desire to please you, has grown worried that you think them the worse for having so adopted a disguise, however well-intentioned.
What could the generous Orsino and the good-hearted Olivia do to assure the respective Cesarios that such was not the case? Feste was only too happy to answer them.
Why attend the ball in the disguise of your neighbor? Feste said. Remind Viola, Sebastian, of the harmless of her, his, own folly by partaking in it yourself. Do you go to the masquerade in the full garb of the Lady Olivia, the Duke Orsino? And then, so disguised as to be the very portrait of the lady, the Duke, herself, himself, show Viola, Sebastian, by your devoted attention to her, to him, for the reminder of the evening that he is completely without fault. With this, the final piece lay upon the board of Feste's devising, for he had piqued the interest of both the Duke and Olivia, and by his count that left only one part to play in the game of the evening, his own. With painstaking care he dressed for the evening of the ball, and by the invitation of the court arrived in splendid detail as the page-boy, Cesario.
"Mark you well, the lord and lady, and their new bride and husband," he told the serving girls before entering the ball. "Make sure their wine-glasses are full."
Thus it was that throughout the evening, in one of the half-dozen private rooms, Feste found, but of course was in no way the wiser to, the merry havoc he had wrought. At 8:30, the Duke, disguised as Olivia, could be heard telling a distressed Sebastian, who wore the guise of Viola, that he loved nothing so well as her, and hoped his humble attempt at showing it had won her favor. At 8:45, with the proper application of the very best Burgundy her ladyship's stores had to offer, Sebastian's distress was rather sounding quite a bit different, and the Duke was getting acquainted with a rougher side to his Viola than he had ever quite considered before. At 9:00, her ladyship was weighing the knowledge that it was hardly right for two men to hold hands, as she even now held hands with her beloved Sebastian under the disguise of Orsino. However, her conviction that surely her Sebastian could see the love she bore him behind her disguise won out, as did the manly strength of the embrace with which he bore her to the couch in her private sitting room. Meanwhile, Viola, whose manly strength had been activated in sheer panic, was alarmed at her husband's apparent devotion to her brother, and more than a little concerned that the idea, far from being repellent, rather made her want to keep playing the part. In any case, how they had wound up in Lady Olivia's private chambers was a subject of some confusion, and something she would strenuously suggest they remedy as soon as she retrieved the use of her hands. Oh, and her tongue. Oh, and her... oh. At 9:45, and Olivia stumbled into one of her ladyship's side rooms, a disheveled Cesario not far behind. Upon seeing yet another Olivia in front of them, embracing a still rumpled Viola, the interrupting Olivia, much to everyone's surprise, murmured,
"Oh, Sebastian, your disguise reveals the truth of your beauty all the more plainly,"
and leaned in for a devastating kiss which the Viola in question, after a long shocked moment, gladly returned. As the kiss deepened, Viola could be heard to murmur,
"Antonio, dearest, do you know me even thus?"
as the second Olivia looked on in confusion. Feste, who was, of course, disguised as Cesario, observed the proceedings, and his lordship's consternation, with no little amusement, and indeed a bit of mild sympathy.
"Cesario?"
Orsino said, blinking at him out of Olivia's painted face.
"I serve your pleasure, my lord," said Feste, in a perfect spirit of generosity, moving into his arms. "Or shall I call you my lady?"
As the time drew nearer to midnight, and the wine flowed long throughout the party, it would certainly be remiss to suggest that two Olivias, an Orsino, and three variants of a petite blonde androgyn all converged in her ladyship's private chambers, or that the ensuing ruckus frightened the serving maids and could be heard outside down to the stables. It would certainly be unthinkable to remark that her ladyship failed to attend the masquerade award ceremony, presumably because she was in her own chambers, being thoroughly unmasked herself with the assistance of the Duke of Illyria, two nubile twins, a very enterprising entertainer, and a lovesick pirate.
But it certainly is no speculative gossip to note that Feste's income increased threefold after her ladyship's masked ball. Nor to note that for weeks afterwards, upon meeting her ladyship in the corridors or assembly, Feste had only to murmur, "Midsummer madness indeed," with a certain sort of smile, to incur a blush, a giggle, and an affectionate remonstrance from her ladyship. And if her ladyship saved her best remonstrances for the bedroom, where she and Sebastian were now frequently joined by any and all of the evening's companions, including Feste himself. Well, what was a fool, if not but the soul of discretion?